Imagine standing next to a racing car, you know, all sleek carbon fiber, built to handle incredible forces. Now, think bigger. Imagine building something, a container maybe, that's so strong it's designed to actually contain an explosion. Sounds a bit like science fiction, doesn't it? But with these advanced materials, like carbon fiber reinforced polymer CFRPs, it's not fiction at all. It's a very real, very important engineering challenge. Today, we're going to dive deep into a really fascinating new study. It looks at how these amazing materials handle extreme dynamic loads. We're talking internal explosions. And crucially, how scientists are getting, well, much closer to predicting how they'll behave with almost uncanny accuracy.
Yeah, what's really exciting here is how this research tackles a critical problem, making sure these high-performance composite pressure vessels are safe and reliable. We'll get into why understanding their dynamic response, you know, how they react instantly, is so vital, and how these cutting-edge computer simulations are basically changing the game for designing them. We'll uncover the exact ways they get damaged when pushed right to the absolute limit. And that brings up a key question, doesn't it? How can we actually trust these digital simulations if we don't do a real-world explosion every time? So our deep dive today, it's grounded in a top-tier research paper. It was published in Fracture and Structural Integrity by KM Hammond and colleagues, and it focuses specifically on dynamic damage analysis of carbon fiber reinforced polymer composite pressure vessels.
Okay, let's unpack that. CFRPs. When we talk about them, we're basically talking about material superheroes, right? They have this exceptional strength-to-weight ratio and stiffness-to-weight, too. Think about it. Incredibly light and incredibly strong, which makes them just crucial for really demanding uses, especially as what engineers call confinement vessels. Now, these aren't just any old tanks. They're built specifically to prevent catastrophic failures, like containing all the debris from an explosion. And that's why understanding precisely how they behave under extreme force is so incredibly important, you know, not just for engineers, but really for public safety too.
Exactly right. And that leads us straight into a major practical issue. Actually, testing these vessels under realistic dynamic loads, like setting off a real explosion inside, is, well, prohibitively expensive and hugely resource intensive. Imagine the facilities, the safety protocols, the costs of blowing up vessel after vessel. So there's this growing trend, and it's really necessary, towards reducing how much destructive testing we do. And how do we do that? By developing these very sophisticated, high-fidelity, finite element analysis models, FEA models.
Okay, that sounds great for, you know, saving time and money. But if we're doing fewer physical tests, how do we make absolutely sure these digital models are, well, completely trustworthy? Especially for something critical like containing a blast. What's the main hurdle in making sure they're valid?
That's a really critical point. See, FEA isn't just a cost saver. It actually improves safety significantly because engineers can predict potential failures before they happen in the real world. And it speeds up research and development hugely. You can tweak designs digitally so much faster than building physical prototypes. But, and this is the key for these models to be truly reliable, they need what's called rational experimental computational correlation, RECC. Basically, just means your digital predictions have to match up closely with real-world experimental results. That correlation, that's the aha moment. It tells us our digital blueprint actually reflects physical reality.
Right, RECC. And I guess to get that good correlation, you really have to understand the material itself in minute detail. CFRPs aren't simple metals.
Oh, they're anything but simple. Yeah. CFRPs aren't uniform homogeneous materials. Their behavior is really complex, influenced by things like how many layers there are, the exact angle of the fibers in each layer, and even how fast you apply the loading rate. And here's something fascinating, maybe even a bit counterintuitive compared to some traditional materials. Experimental data actually shows that faster strain rates, hitting it harder and faster, can increase the stiffness, the elastic modulus, and even the tensile strength of CFRPs. So in an impact or a blast scenario, the material can effectively get stronger the faster it's loaded. That's a critical characteristic designers absolutely must account for.
Wow. Okay. So it's like the faster you punch it, the harder it gets. That's wild. So given these extreme conditions, modeling the structure and the explosive force, what kind of simulation techniques are needed? It sounds like you need more than one trick up your sleeve.
That's exactly right. You need a blend. This study used Abaqus Explicit FEA software, building on earlier experimental work. Picture this: a virtual test setup. You've got the CFRP vessel shell, and inside it, there's a solid tube made of PMA that's like plexiglass. Then, for the explosion itself, they simulate it really cleverly using something called a Eulerian domain. Imagine it like a fixed grid in space, and the vapor from a simulated exploding copper wire just flows through this grid. The setup mimics that sudden, intense internal pressure spike you'd get from, say, reactive chemicals exploding inside. The clever bit is the Eulerian part lets that explosion expand and flow without messing up the simulation's mesh, which is a huge problem with older methods.
Okay, so that's where this coupled Eulerian-Lagrangian analysis, the CEL method, comes in. Sounds like the perfect tool for blending those different needs.
Precisely. CEL is where the magic happens here. Think of it like this. The Lagrangian part is like tracking tags attached to the material. The computer nodes move with the CFRP and the PMMA, great for seeing how they deform. But for the explosion itself, where stuff is flying apart and deforming massively, that Lagrangian mesh would get hopelessly tangled. So that's where the Eulerian part steps in. Its grid stays fixed, and the exploding vapor just flows through it. Perfect for handling extreme deformation. Combining them means you get efficient, accurate transfer of that pressure pulse from the vapor to the PMMA insert and then into the CFRP vessel wall. The real breakthrough is that this blend lets them model both the fluid dynamics of the blast and the structural response of the vessel together accurately. It solves a huge headache in modeling these events.
That makes sense. And to get that accuracy, I assume the digital version of the CFRP itself has to be incredibly detailed. How did they actually map the material layers?
Well, the level of detail is pretty remarkable. They looked at two main CFRP setups. One was called uniaxial, 0 degrees 10. All the fibers ran circumferentially, basically wrapping around the hoop direction of the vessel. The other was an angle ply, plus 45 degrees, 45 degrees 5. Here, the layers alternated, with fibers angled at plus 45 degrees and minus 45 degrees to that hoop direction. Both were just 1 millimeter thick overall, but made of 10 individual layers, each only 0.1 millimeters thick. And here's why that detail matters. They modeled each of those 10 layers separately, with its own elements, not just treating it as one solid chunk, why? To capture delamination. That's when the layers start separating at the interfaces, which is a really common failure mode in composites. And for the CFRP elements themselves, they use something called continuum shell elements. Think of them as smart, thin digital slices that capture how the shell bends and reacts through its thickness really well, but without the massive computational cost of modeling every single fiber in 3D. It's about finding that sweet spot between accuracy and efficiency.
Okay, got it. So complex materials, incredibly fast, intense forces. How do you even start to classify the damage? What tools or criteria do engineers use to diagnose how these composites are failing under blast?
Right, you need specific diagnostic tools. They use a powerful combination for what's called intralaminar damage. That's damage within a single layer, like fiber snapping or the matrix material cracking. They use the Hashin criterion. This is a well-established, physically-based method. It's good because it can actually tell the difference between fibers failing and the matrix failing.
Okay, so Hashin looks inside the layers. What about when the layers themselves pull apart, that delamination you mentioned?
Exactly. For that interlaminar damage, which often manifests as spallation layers separating, they use the virtual crack closure technique, or VCCT. VCCT is really effective for tracking how cracks actually grow and propagate between the layers. So the really neat thing in this study is that they successfully combined both Hashin and VCCT in the same simulation. This gives them a comprehensive picture of both main types of damage happening at the same time. Which is a big step forward, actually. You get the full story of the failure in one analysis.
Right, and that leads us to the results. This is where it gets really fascinating, isn't it? This, like, microsecond by microsecond breakdown of the failure. What did the simulations show for that angle ply layup?
Yeah, the simulations painted a very precise picture. A chronology of failure for that, plus 45 degrees, 45 degrees, 5 angle ply layup. It happens incredibly fast. First, they saw the matrix. Remember, that's the glue holding the fibers fail in tension. At just 3.26 microseconds. Almost immediately after, at 3.7 microseconds, matrix compressive failure started. Then, a tiny bit later, the fibers themselves started to go. Tensile failure at 5.24 microseconds. And finally, fiber compressive failure at 5.68 microseconds. The whole catastrophic sequence unfolds in less than 6 millionths of a second.
Wow. So what's the takeaway from that sequence? It sounds like a domino effect.
Mm-hmm.
It shows this clear progressive decay of the composite strength, right? The matrix seems to act as the first weak link.
Yeah.
It fails, initiates the damage, and that just accelerates everything, leading to the fibers breaking. It really highlights how incredibly stunning and destructive blast loading is.
It absolutely does. And the simulations also help solve some of the mystery around spallation, that layer separation. It turns out it's primarily driven by reflected tensile waves. Think about it. The initial shock wave from the explosion travels outwards
as a compressive wave. It hits the outer surface of the vessel. And because that's a free surface, the wave reflects back, but reflects as a tensile wave, pulling things apart. So you have this reflected tensile wave traveling back inwards, meeting the still incoming compressive wave. This creates a zone of really high tensile stress inside the material thickness, literally trying to rip the layers apart from within.
Okay, and the inspallation, it doesn't just happen randomly. You said it starts in the middle layers near the PMMA insert. Why specifically there?
That's down to a couple of things. The complex way these stress waves bounce around, interfere with each other, and something called impedance mismatch between the layers. Imagine sound waves hitting a boundary between two different materials. Some energy reflects back. It's similar here. Because the layers in the angle ply layup have fibers at different orientations, they behave slightly differently mechanically. The interfaces between them become locations where stress waves can get amplified. This makes those interfaces, particularly in the middle layers where these interactions are strongest, vulnerable to being pulled apart. And that's also why spallation was less severe in the 0-degree 10 layup, the uniaxial one. Because all the layers had the same fiber orientation, there was less impedance mismatch between them. The simulations also clearly showed what's called Modi fracture was dominant for spallation. That means the layers were being pulled directly apart, not shearing past each other. This confirms it's that through thickness tensile stress caused by the wave reflections, that's the main driver.
And the really crucial part, I guess, for validating this whole approach is how well did these virtual explosions actually match the real-world experiments? How accurate were the numbers?
The agreement was actually very impressive, very strong. For predicting the velocity of the vessel wall as it expanded, the accuracy was over 90%, specifically 90.6% for the degrees 10 and 92% for the plus 45 degrees, 45 degrees, 5 samples. There were small differences, sure, but those are likely due to ideal things in the model versus exact measurement points in the physical tests. Even more striking, for the angle ply layup, the predicted shear failure stress was 47.9 megapascals numerically, compared to 47.0 experimentally. That's 98.1% accuracy, almost spot on. And for the uniaxial layup, the tensile failure stress was predicted at 1900 MPa, which is within 11.3% of the experimental value of 2142 MPa. That might sound like a bigger gap, but it's actually a huge improvement over older models that couldn't properly account for both the interlaminar and interlaminar damage modes together. So yeah, these strong correlations really build confidence that these kinds of simulation models can reliably predict how these composites behave under internal blasts.
Okay, so stepping back, what's the big picture here? What does this mean for, designing safer structures? It sounds like this study marks a really crucial step forward by creating this validative computational framework, right? A tool that can capture both the damage within the layers and the separation between the layers, all happening simultaneously under blast conditions. That must give designers incredibly powerful insights into how to make these vessels tougher, showing them exactly where the weak spots are and which failure modes are most likely. It's almost like giving them X-ray vision into the failure process itself.
It definitely is a significant step. But like with any cutting-edge research, it's important to acknowledge the current limitations too. One key point they mentioned is the use of quasi-static material properties in the model. Remember how we said CFRPs can get stronger when hit really fast? Well, quasi-static properties are measured under slow loading. They represent the material's sort of baseline strength. Because the model used these baseline values, it might not fully capture that extra strength boost the material gets at very high strain rates. This could mean the model might slightly overpredict the amount of damage in the most extreme, fastest loading scenarios. It's something they recognize as an area for future refinement. Also, the way they modeled the exploding wire's vapor, the equation of state was simplified for computational efficiency. It doesn't capture every complex detail of the explosion physics, another area to improve down the line.
Right. Always room for refinement. And that naturally leads to what's next. Where does the research go from here? Incorporating those strain rate effects you just mentioned sounds key.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Future work will definitely focus on integrating more sophisticated material models that account for how strength changes with strain rate. Also refining the boundary conditions in the simulation, making the virtual environment even more realistic, and of course, validating the models against a wider range of experimental data, different explosion energies, maybe different types of CFRPs, different vessel geometries. It's about continuously building confidence and expanding the model's applicability.
So today, we really journeyed deep into the world of these carbon fiber reinforced polymer pressure vessels. We saw how these advanced simulations are giving us this incredible window into their strength, but also their vulnerabilities under the extreme stress of an explosion. From watching that failure sequence unfold, microsecond by microsecond, to understanding the crucial role of those reflected shock waves, it really shows the complex dance of forces inside these materials.
Yeah, and if you connect this to the bigger picture, being able to predict material behavior under such extreme, rapid conditions, it fundamentally changes how we design for safety. Think about space exploration, hazardous material transport, even industrial processing equipment. The applications are vast. But it also leaves us with a provocative thought, maybe for you, the listener. As these digital models become so realistic, almost indistinguishable from physical reality in some cases, how might that change our fundamental reliance on physical testing? Not just in engineering, but perhaps in other scientific fields too.
That's a great question to ponder. This research doesn't just make confinement vessels safer. It really pushes the boundaries of material science and computational engineering. It paves the way for innovations that could protect us in ways we're maybe only just beginning to fully grasp. Until next time, keep exploring, keep asking questions, and keep digging deeper.